Our guest today on All Things Soul with Jay Johnson was born one of 10 children, the ninth of 10 children in Hickory, Mississippi, and rose to become one of the wealthiest men in America. He is literally the first African-American billionaire in this country, founder of Black Entertainment Television, BET, a philanthropist, a world citizen, a member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. It is my great honor and privilege to welcome to our radio show, All Things Soul at WBGO, Mr. Robert Johnson, founder of BET. So, Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today. First question I have for you, sir, is you founded BET in 1980. I noticed that you started off your career, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You were in media, you were in television, communications. What motivated you to found BET in 1980? And thanks again for joining us.
Well, Jay, thanks for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here with you. You know, Jay, when I started BET back in the 1980s, I had become a lobbyist for the cable television industry. After working at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the local Urban League in D.C., and when I got in the cable industry, it was at its infancy in becoming a programming channel and providing a mix of programming from CNN to MTV to ESPN. And so what I wanted to do was really follow in the steps of John Johnson, who did what he did in magazines, but no one had ever done it in video technology, because the technology of satellite distribution to get a signal across the country didn't exist. And the cable industry brought that diversity by providing a multiplicity of channels. And I said, somebody ought to start a Black channel to provide content, just as John did with a Black magazine to chronicle the rise of the Black middle class. And I say, why not me? And so I went to one of the largest owners of cable companies, a guy named John Malone, and he backed me with the first $500,000 to start BET.
You know, when I grew up in the late 70s, we had Good Times. We had shows like Sanford and Son. How did you assess Black television at that moment in 1980? And did you want to take it in a different direction at all?
Well, the biggest difference, Jay, between BET and shows like you talked about, the Jeffersons, Sanford and Son, and Benson, I remember all of them. You know, they were only on television one time a week, and they were in the mix of other programming that didn't really target Black viewers. Cable television allowed the creation of a 24-hour targeted channel that provided solely content designed to appeal to the viewing interests of Black Americans and the informational needs of Black Americans. So, for example, back then, Black college football and basketball was not on television regularly. So BET provided that. There were very few of any Black news shows on video. BET went that way. Same thing with talk shows. Yeah, we did get some of the TV shows off the networks, the sitcoms, and run them on BET. But what really drove us was music. When the industry created videos as a way of marketing their records from Black artists, that was the turning point for BET and ultimately MTV. But MTV back in the 1980s, Jay, you may not remember this, only played rock music. So they didn't play Black artist music videos. And so that left an opening for BET to fill the gap by bringing the core of Black culture, which is music, to the audience. And that was the driver of BET with shows like Video Soul. And that became the sort of the brand of why BET went on to become a success. Music, a little bit of sports, talk shows, but mainly 24-hour content that appealed directly to the Black audience.
Let me ask you something somewhat provocative. John Amos, who played James Evans on Good Times, resigned from the show because he felt that the role of JJ, his son in the show, was playing the stereotype, which he didn't like.
And you're absolutely right. He was sort of a pioneer in speaking out on what I call the paternalistic view of how Black people should be presented to the audience by the white directors and the producers and the heads of the network, because no one was making decisions about programming content who was Black. And I think most Americans agree, Black Americans agreed with his focus, but they didn't have a way to change it because all the networks and TV stations were owned by white business owners. What BET tried to do was to say, let's go after content produced by Blacks, starring Blacks, and therefore we could have a different voice. Now, we didn't have the money to produce expensive sitcoms or dramas, but we did have the money to do local talk shows and interviews. So for example, one of our talent, a guy named Ed Gordon, he ended up getting the first interview with O.J. Simpson to talk about it. It became like a major story for us. And there were other interviews with people who wanted to say something exclusively by talking to Black people. And so what we offered was a little bit more exclusivity, sort of plant and produced by Blacks, starring Blacks. And the same thing, as I said earlier, with the music. If you wanted to see Black artists, you wouldn't find it in MTV VH1, but you would find it in BET. You want to see Grambling playing Southern at the Bayou Classic. Back then, ESPN wasn't putting Black football on a regular basis on television. So we were seeing on BET Sports, Jerry Rice, long before Jerry Rice went on to become an all-star playing for the 49. That was the differential. Yeah, we tried to do within our startup budget what we could do to give a different narrative and a different exposure.
As the graduate of an HBCU myself, Morehouse College, though football was not what we were known for in the late 70s, I certainly thank you for that. What is the thing that, Mr. Johnson, what is the thing that you are most proud of in terms of founding BET?
Jay, I think it goes without question. The thing I'm most proud of is that I was able to bring together on a voyage to start a company a number of talented Black Americans who wanted to be part of something creative, part of something financially successful, and something meaningful to the Black community. And in the process, those young men and women early in the 80s took a chance with me by putting themselves in the company that had a lot of risk attached to it. But we went on to be successful. And what we were able to do, Jay, is with BET, when BET went private and then went public, we created more African-American millionaires than any company Black-owned had ever done, because people took a risk to put their family and their time and their effort behind the creation of Black entertainment television. And I am very proud of those individuals and very proud that they were able to benefit along with myself as BET became the success that it still is today.
Mr. Johnson, I know that since Black Entertainment Television, you have become an investor, you've invested in professional sports teams, and you've become a philanthropist. And I know that one of your philanthropic activities that you are most proud of is helping the Black community through their 401ks, their 401k investments. Could you just spend a moment on that? I know it's something that you're proud of and you want it to be part of your legacy.
Absolutely, Dave. I'm glad you give me a chance to talk about that because, as you know, the biggest problem facing Black Americans is the huge wealth gap in income between Black households and white households, probably a 10 times wealth gap. Part of the problems that Black people face and that cause that wealth gap, in addition to lack of home ownership and savings, is that unfortunately, Black Americans cash out of their 401k when they change jobs, because the system doesn't provide for that 401k to follow you wherever you go on a job, and people will take the cash out. Well, when they cash out, the biggest thing they lose is the compounding growth of a 401k account, not to mention the tax on what they take out and a penalty for taking it out, because it was designed as a benefit for retirement. What I've done is to convince the largest 401k record keepers to talk to the corporations where most Americans work and say, let's reduce cash out by Black Americans, particularly in Hispanics. And if we are successful with this business model, which you're right, it does have a little bit of philanthropic kind of appeal because we're running it almost like a utility. It's not designed to make a lot of money for it, but it is designed to reduce cash out. If we're successful in this, say over a generation, Black Americans will save approximately $619 billion in retirement income for their families. And that will go a long way towards addressing the wealth gap between Black and white Americans. Moreover, it will provide a lifestyle for Black Americans when they retire, savings for their family, and an opportunity to increase their savings. And I think if we're able to do this, this will be right up there alongside BET and one of the most meaningful things that I've accomplished in my life.
Bob, if I could portray your age, you were born in 1946. You were born in Mississippi. You migrated with your family north when you were a young boy. Your ear for music, I suspect, was developed in the mid to late 50s, early 60s. What has music, specifically R&B music, meant to you in your life?
Well, when I left Mississippi, I grew up in Freeport, Illinois, small Midwestern town, 30,000 people, 10% Black, somewhat segregated by, as you would expect, Blacks on one side of the town, whites on the other. And what we had was radio. And it was television, wasn't it? There was no cable. And so what you do on radio and records, if you remember back in the 80s, you had LPs and you had 45s. And you had the first thing you bought when you got a house or you went to college, you got you a record player and plastic. And that to me was how I got introduced to music, because that was pretty much all you could do. There are a few clubs in the town, but it was really, you went to parties, you know, parties in the basement with one red light, and you listened to R&B and soul. It wasn't even hip hop. It certainly wasn't rap. It was R&B and soul. And so most of that music, Jay, as you know, was ballads. So you had Smokey, you had Marvin, you had The Whispers, you know, you had Bobby Womack, you had Peebo Bryson, you had Jerry Butler. And that was the way you became, so that you became of age. As a young man, you knew how to talk to women because the music sort of hinted as you how you tell your story and you how you dance. You know, the music was slow dancing. It wasn't, you know, flailing at a yarn. So that's how I became sort of totally embraced with Black soul music, Black radio, Black records. And then how that had you grow up in your relationship as a young man in your life. And you use music to kind of talk to your girlfriend or to, dress. It was style. It was music.
Who were some of your favorite artists in that period?
Well, obviously, if you go back to the 70s, 60s, and 70s, you know, you got to think of the Drifters.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be having some fun.
Under the boardwalk,
people walking above.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be falling in love.
Under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
The ability of Clyde McFadden to sing songs like that, you had to embrace that. As I mentioned, Smokey Robinson. And everything that Berry Gordy turned out, you know, Martha Reeve and the Vandellas, the Supremes, and, you know, Junior Walker and All-Star. I mean, it was all part of your high school experience and your college experience that these names, these artists, you know, Teddy Pendergrass, the Dells, all of these guys, particularly, I was particularly fond of ballads. And so when that music came about, it was sort of a part of the way you, as I said, you came into manhood listening to those tunes. You know, even, you know, Nat King Cole, you adopted Nat King Cole's Christmas songs. And that was... that was us. And it was something that you embraced.
And I know you have as one of your favorites, Bobby Womack.
Yep. Bobby, I don't know, maybe it's because his name was Bobby. Mine was named Bob and my folks called me Bobby. But Bobby had this way of singing and talking. Always had a little bit of a message in his music. He wasn't the greatest voice, but evidently he had a way of sort of teaching you about life. You know, even if you get early on, later on, before the 80s, and he'd sing, you know, songs like Harry Hippie. And then when the music, when he got really big, he did the soundtrack for the film Across 110th Street. And it's a lot of lesson in Bobby's music back then, and it still existed. You know, and if you look at some of his latest tunes, it was still the same way that Bobby would sing and Bobby would talk, but he always had a message in it.
Mr. Robert Johnson, founder of BET, investor, philanthropist, American icon. Thank you for joining us on All Things Soul with WBGO. Thank you, sir.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be on with you on the radio station, WBGO, and love to come back anytime you have me.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
You too.